Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special episode of One Perfect Game, the show about video games and the people who play them. My name is Matt Tilby. I am your host for this wonderful adventure. And my guest for today's episode is a former US Special Forces Green Beret who was deployed to Iraq in 2008. More recently, he's been in a number of creative places. He's been a part of Experts React and Total Recoil on the Gameology YouTube channel. That, in turn, helped form the Pop Culture Field Manual podcast alongside co-host and former US Army Ranger Cameron Fath. And finally, he can be also found on his Twitch channel at twitch.tv/myhappyself. I am stoked to be talking to Israel Wright today. Israel, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you for that amazing, articulate, and totally flattering introduction. I have learned so much in just the first 10 seconds of your podcast on how to do a great intro, so thank you for that.
It's pretty common that I get told that I've got a voice for radio and that I should
you
be...
You do.
I should be doing this for a living, so that's always nice to hear. Thank you. But yeah, how you been, man? We've been trying to organize this one for quite a while, it seems. You've been a busy boy.
Yeah. I mean, apart from just being busy with, you know, the podcast stuff and trying to basically just trying to spin up a content creation career, you know, that, you know, I got COVID, you know, a little while ago, recovered from that.
Oh, geez. Okay.
and then went on a little vacation, you know, just to kind of spend some time with family. Yeah. And then now I'm back and I'm happy to be here. I'm glad I'm honored that you would have me on your show. You know, I'm honored that anybody would be interested in anything that I have to say. And so I hope I can provide some good commentary for you.
Well, it's certainly a unique journey that you've been through. And I mean, I'll be honest, I came through your work through Gameology and seeing you and Cameron go through this sort of plethora of first-person shooters and sort of army-based titles. How did this link with Gameology come about? How did this sort of partnership take place?
There's an organization out here in Los Angeles called VME, Veterans in Media and Entertainment, and it's a great organization that kind of advocates for current and former military people to kind of break into the entertainment industry, writers, actors, producers, directors. They have internships, you know, with Lionsgate. They have partnerships with other companies. They do workshops and stuff. And so just through my connection with them, I kind of got an email from them one day say, hey, you know, are you interested in maybe doing these reaction videos to video games as a former military guy? I was like, that's me right down the line. That sounds amazing, you know? And this was kind of the middle of last year, 2020. And then that's actually where I met Cameron Fath, who's the former Army Ranger. And he and I just kind of hit it off right off the bat. Like, he's a great guy, you know, really good soldier. He's actually, at the time of this recording, he's still in the National Guard doing his thing, you know, doing his drills and stuff like that. So I appreciated his perspective because he's a little bit younger than me and I'm a little bit older. I kind of got out a little while ago. But yeah, that's kind of how it all got started. And then, you know, our videos have done very well. I'm happy to say people really like what we have to say, but then I think they also like just the kind of rapport and back and forth that me and Cameron have, which I think is great because I like hanging out with them, and whenever we get together, it's always a good time. And then, so somebody like yourself, they saw the videos and they reached out to us and say, hey, you ever thought about doing like a podcast or something like that? And I was like, I have never done a podcast and I never even thought about doing a podcast before. But this gentleman had experience in it and stuff. And so we got together with him and we started doing that. And boy, that's just been a blast, man. If I could do podcasts like what we're doing right now with the Pop Culture Field Manual, like if I could do that as a career alone, that would be amazing, you know, because I just have so much fun doing it, you know. I just like talking about things that I like talking about. Like, what could be better, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's always the way to go. And it's certainly been a unique sort of perspective, having that sort of like odd couple, younger and older sort of, I guess, military sense to your videos. And I guess out of the games that you've played on Experts React and sort of also analyzed on Total Recall, what do you feel has been, I guess, like the most accurate to sort of actual squad-based situations and that sort of immersive experience, and also what's been the least accurate?
Well, I think in terms of the most accurate are probably the games that I myself have no interest in playing, which are Arma, Squad, and Insurgency. You know, Arma and Squad and Insurgency Sandstorm, I think, were some of the first games that we we had did commentary for, you know, way back when. And I love the team aspect of it, you know, the communication aspect of it. They really try to make that like at the forefront of the game, you know. They try to like, you know, punish individual kind of movements and reward you working as a unit, you know, which is like, that's like being in the military down the line, you know, working as a team. And the, even the movements of the soldiers are not like, it's not this fast paced arcade where you're like jumping up and down and going 50 miles an hour and everything's happening so quick and you get that quick twitch muscle reaction kind of thing. Like your guys actually kind of run kind of slow, you know, and you got to get over the hill and it takes you a couple minutes to get over the hill, you know. You know, they work really hard. I know that there's a bunch of mod squads out there, but this ISMC mod squad or the ISMC mod group, they have actually brought, they put real world modern weapons and they put them into the game, and they're just a bunch of people that are really passionate about the game, you know. I think it's Insurgency is the one that they do that for, but we did a Total Recoil episode on that. I actually got pretty shellacked on that one. That was the first episode of Total Recoil to come out, and you know, it really convicted me because, you know, I got out of the military 11 years ago and I've not kept up on the latest and greatest weapons and things like that. Now there's no rule that says that I have to, but to maintain the honor and integrity of being a Green Beret, you know, former Special Forces Green Beret, I feel like I have some obligation to kind of maybe bone up on a couple of those things a little bit, you know. So and that was the most realistic. The least realistic stuff is, I mean, it's kind of like Warzone, you know. You look at Warzone and it's just fun, wild action. It's fast paced, it gets your blood pumping and things like that, you know. And it really kind of, they do a good job of making it like a fun experience, you know. Mm. Which I don't know that I would describe going to war as a fun experience, you know. But you know, it, not to say that there is not honor and camaraderie and wild, crazy, you know, funny things that happen. But you know, the idea, you know, like the weapon mods and the you know, the crazy costumes and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just. Obviously, realism is not the main point, you know, like action and fun and engagement, you know, that kind of stuff. That's kind of, and then bringing like the real world weapons, you see the kind of real weapons in there and stuff, because, you know, the kids today, they want to get that kind of sense of like that kind of, you know, as a vicarious living, you know. I want to, they, you know, most of these kids will maybe never fire a firearm in their entire lives, you know. Yeah. So it's that kind of aspect that most video games, I think, kind of try to offer in some way that deal with the kind of military realm, you know. So Warzone is, you know, good fun, good clean fun, but, you know, not necessarily a real world experience.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who has tried to sign up for the armed forces and I guess having dodgy knees and a stomach problem, being you know, being knocked back, but I guess it's probably the best way to sort of, I guess, live vicariously through that. So you've hit the nail on the head there. But yeah, I mean, you obviously mentioned that's where you met Cameron, your co-host on Experts React, as well as the Pop Culture Field Manual podcast. What's it been like being able to bounce those experiences and stories off a fellow vet? Because obviously you did mention that sort of that age gap and that sort of difference and sort of evolution in military style between when you went to Iraq and when he was deployed as well. What's that sort of difference been like for you?
That's a good question. Like it's been humbling is the word that kind of comes to mind, because as I've stepped into pushing into this content creation career, I am in a certain category, right? I'm a former military guy, and then I'm even in kind of a smaller category where I'm a Special Forces Green Beret. You know, that's a legacy that I'm a part of now, you know. So there's a certain amount, like I said before, of I feel responsibility, you know, to kind of gain knowledge and learn and stuff. And then as I do that, I realize that that's what being a Green Beret is all about. It's building relationships and learning and adapting and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and improvising with the resources that you have. And so learning about what Cameron has been through and how the training has changed, and then even his perspective as a Ranger and even his perspective as a younger guy and why he did what he did and what he learned, kind of gives perspective to my experiences. You know, I like to say that military experience, or anything that kind of like the military, where it's, you have, you know, it's this intense experience for a time in your life, it's very formative and stuff. As you get further away from the experience, you learn more and more. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, you know. And so I'm very thankful for Cameron's openness and his kind of willingness to kind of share what he's been through, because it's, you know, it's fun to see what's the same. It's fun to see what's different. Not that we went through exactly the same kind of training, but it's fun to see what he went through. That's like, oh, that's kind of like the Q course, you know. It's kind of like RASP, you know, similar. But then it also like it reawakens, like I've been talking about, like this kind of desire to kind of step into the role of being a Green Beret and what that means, what it really means versus what public perception might be, you know, because when I was in the military, I kind of saw myself as kind of like just like a visitor, you know, like I never really fully stepped into like, I am a soldier, you know, I'm a U.S. Army soldier. I'm like, I'm a soldier and it's great and this is fun. I'm having a good time and I'm going to leave in a couple years, you know, that was always the plan. But now, as I, you know, after the fact, thinking about it more and more, I'm like, wow, you know, it's a, I get a bigger picture of the, what I was a part of, you know, the tradition, the esprit de corps, the mindset and stuff. And I'm thankful for it. And then I find that I want to step further into it, you know, like, cause I can never go back, but I can still carry on kind of the mindset and the tradition and the honor and integrity of what I was, you know, stuff like that. So. It's been really fun. I'm thankful for the friendship and then also the connection that I have with anybody that's been in the military, but Cameron especially as a working partner and then a friend, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you sort of mentioned that sort of public perception of what a Green Beret is or what they have done. For people who probably don't, I guess, or have never even heard of the term of the Green Beret, and I guess working in the special forces, what is involved in that sort of position, I guess, compared to, say, even Cameron's position as an Army Ranger or even just in the regular military?
So Green Beret is, I've heard it said that, you know, Green Beret is like a force multiplier. Like, it's not just direct action stuff, you know, just kicking in doors and things like that. It's a lot of what the Green Berets do and what they're about is, you know, going into a country and kind of foreign internal defense, which would be like, you know, going into a country and helping to stabilize it against other destabilizing forces. So, you know, you go in and you build relationships and you engage in like training and you engage in, you know, cultural engagement and things like that. You train indigenous forces, you know, to help and help you to do your mission and stuff like that. It's a fuller spectrum. It's a multifaceted kind of job that you're doing, you know, where you're talking to people, you're getting intel, you're building relationships, you're having tea with the local, you know, leaders and stuff like that. In my case, you know, in Iraq. And then you do put packages together and you do execute on missions and stuff like that. But it's a pretty fun and multifaceted kind of job. I would say Rangers, you know, and Cameron can correct me on this later, but, you know, they're like super infantry. They do the common uncommonly well. You know, they do the common tasks to perfection. You know, that's what they're about. But they are formatted in a regular platoon size, you know, platoon command structure, you know, whereas a Special Forces ODA, which stands for Operational Detachment Alpha, it's a 12-man team. There's four different job types, two men in each job. There's a warrant officer, a captain, a senior NCO, and an intelligence sergeant, you know. And so that kind of creates that command element, which can be split kind of down the middle if you ever need to work independently. One group can go here, one group can go there. So it's kind of modular in that sense. You've got a weapons sergeant, junior and senior for each one, a weapons sergeant, an 18 Bravo, an engineer, 18 Charlie, 18 Echo, which was my job, communications, and then an 18 Delta, which is your medic, you know. And so, to me, the fun part of it was always learning something new, always cross-training with the different groups and things like that, or the different jobs that we had within. Everybody's position, everybody's that much more important on a 12-man ODA because there's less of us, you know. Everybody's opinion matters that much more. Everybody's input matters that much more because there's just fewer guys, and you're really there's an opportunity there, at least, for to become a really kind of tight-knit group and things like that, you know. I hope that kind of It's funny, I'm having to draw on my, I want to like use like official language and stuff like that, but that's what I remember it being like, you know. the Green Berets kind of came from, you know, they got their start in the, really, well, I mean, a lot of it came from British SAS and things like that. I think that's where the Green Beret came from, if I remember correctly. And then Vietnam was where that format really kind of came into its own, you know, and they really had their kind of time to shine and stuff like that, with building relationships with the locals and doing counterinsurgency and guerrilla tactics and stuff like that, guerrilla warfare. And then that, from there, that's kind of, they've kind of developed from that place, you know. And I actually am interested in talking to Green Berets that are in today, if I get the opportunity, to see how much it's changed or how much it's stayed the same.
Yeah, for sure. It's such an interesting thing to discuss. Like, obviously on the podcast, we've had, you know, Twitch streamers, musicians, comedians, that sort of creative field, but it's such an eye-opening experience being able to talk to someone who has served for their country and been able to, you know, commit themselves fully to their job and in such a fashion that, you know, people like myself in a, you know, a regular setting don't get the opportunity to experience or see those sorts of opportunities. So big thank you for that. That's a unique thing to be able to listen to and hear. And I mean, you must have had some amazing experiences over in Iraq, and yeah, thank you for giving up your time for your country.
I appreciate that. I mean, I like to say I had a probably as good an experience as one could have in the military. I got to do all the fun stuff, and I had none of the tragedy. I mean, now obviously we had losses and things like that, but at the time I was far removed from those kinds of things, you know. And I was never, thankfully, involved in any of the kind of Black Hawk Down kind of situation and stuff. I had a good time. I had a really good time in the military, you know, and I got to do lots of, you're right, I did get to do lots of fun stuff. And it's important to remember that, so that, you know, so that kind of helped with my gratitude. I'm very thankful for what I got to do and the opportunities that I was presented with. And I'm thankful that I took advantage of some of those, and I made some mistakes, and it wasn't always fun, but I look back fondly on, you know, what I got to do. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. But we should move on, obviously. We are, of course, here to talk about video games. And
yeah,
of course, ladies and gentlemen, you can't see the video chat that we have, but Israel's room is pretty much filled with pop culture paraphernalia. There's a Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 poster on his wall. There's a Dishonored mask right up the back. He's
We got Boss Logic right there.
Yeah. America. Yeah. This man is a big pop culture fan, I should say. But normally at this part of the podcast, Israel, we do like to ask our guests about, I guess, their formative years in gaming, or sort of what they grew up with and what they, you know, played as they got older. So for you, what was that sort of first memory of gaming, or first experiences that you've had, at least, that you can remember?
Right, one of the first ones. I mean, it might have been the first video game experience I had, but it was a Miss Pac-Man. It had to have been early 80s. Yeah, out in Leona Valley, California, which is kind of in the Mojave Desert north of Los Angeles. And it was at a pizza place. It was a tabletop, you know, it was an arcade game. You look down on it, you have the controller and stuff like that. That's the first time I think I remember a video game, you know. And then apart from kind of the dinky little handheld tape, you know, things that they had with the little red light guys that kind of only did one thing. It's basically just random light of things.
The Game & Watch sort of style, like one-dimensional bits, yeah.
Yeah. My first home console, I remember having friends that always had video game consoles. So I remember the Atari, you know, 3600, I think it was, kind of the latter Ataris. And then the first video game system, home system, that I ever got myself was a NES. It was a Nintendo, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, that one, I have more memories of the Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda, than I do of, like, because the Super Mario Brothers came with the system. You could either get that, or you could get the light gun one, which had Duck Hunt on it, kind of double game. But that's kind of the first one. I've always been console heavy. I've never had a PC up until this last year when I started streaming. So, you know, it was a NES, Super Nintendo. I had a TurboGrafx 16, which kind of came and went really quick, you know.
Yeah.
And then apart from a Dreamcast, kind of somewhere in my college years, it was always been PlayStation all the way through. 1, 2, 3, 4, and now 5. Luckily, I got one about a month ago, you know.
congratulations on the the miracle.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it sounds like you've obviously kept to the PlayStation side, and obviously with your streaming that you're doing on Twitch, you've been able to, I guess, dive a little bit into that that sort of PC side of things. But as you sort of, you've got older and I guess gone, you know, into your teenage years, and you said you went through the PlayStation side of things, did you ever sort of, you know, jump from Nintendo, Xbox, or was it purely just PlayStation all the way through?
Oh, it was a PlayStation all the way through. I remember I did, I don't know if I owned it or I played it on, it must have been maybe my cousin's, but like I remember playing Knights of the Old Republic on an Xbox.
Oh yes,
you know, yeah. Which was, I'm so thankful for that experience. But it was pretty much, I remember it went like pretty much Super Nintendo, TurboGrafx 16 for about a year or two, and then PlayStation sometime after I moved to Colorado. I remember that very distinctly, you know. And I was like a loyalist, you know, PlayStation loyalist, and everything that Xbox did was bad, you know. Actually, now that I think about it, I did have a Dreamcast there, kind of a little bit. And, I mentioned that before, but yes, the Dreamcast was amazing. I do have a Sega Saturn, actually, now that I think. So there's a bit of a Sega in my life. In my life. I got a Sega Saturn because when I lived in Colorado Springs in high school, there was a certain store called Electronic Gaming that had imported games. That was the first time I was introduced to imported games. And I got a little adapter thing where you could play imported games. And so I found the last Sega Saturn in all of Colorado Springs. And I used that adapter, and I have, you know, Radiant Silver Gun. I've got the Dungeons and Dragons arcade game, you know, Castlevania Symphony of the Night imported. I have like a, Sakura Tyson. Yeah. I've got like a dating sim with that I've never played, but I just wanted to get it for some reason. It's all dialogue, and I don't understand anything that's happening in the game, but, you know, I just wanted it because I was a dumb teenager.
So it sounds like you really enjoy, I guess, diving into a little bit of the more obscure sort of stuff then as well. Is that something that you've continued on with as you got older? Is that, you know, searching for more imported titles or I guess region only sort of games? Is that something that's continued as you've got older?
Well, I'd say it was more of a phase because when I was in high school, that was like one of my favorite places to hang out was that Electronic Gaming store. Just off of Academy in Colorado Springs. I remember very distinctly. Two Turkish brothers were the proprietors of that shop. And they had a little land, a little LAN area in the back with the PCs all set up. You could rent time, you know, and stuff. I'd say that when it comes to obscure stuff, movies, music, television, really I am the guy that has the friends that are into that stuff, that hears about that stuff, and then goes and checks it out. You know, I'm not the one that goes and scours the internet for the latest imported or region specific whatever. I'm what marketing people would call a late adopter. After everybody's done it and tried it, I'm like, oh, what's this thing, what's this internet you guys have been talking about, you know, or, you know, things like that.
you have been lucky, I guess, as you said, recently to pick up a PS5. Having one myself, I can currently say it is a massive investment. But how are you finding the current range of consoles at the moment? What are you playing?
Well, right now I'm playing a lot of Apex Legends. If I'm being totally honest, because I played Titanfall 2 on stream, and I was looking for a community game to play, and I was playing Warzone, and that was all right, you know, but I've always been a fan of sci-fi and fantasy since I was a little kid, you know. I suppose being in the military might have had something to do with it, but I just want something with laser guns instead of, you know, pew-pew solid, you know, bullet weapons or whatever, you know. And so somebody recommended Apex because it takes place in the same universe as Titanfall 2, you know, technically like 20 years or whatever after the events of Titanfall 2. So I'm playing that a lot. Actually, Hogabow, this guy who's a former pro player, I was taking lessons from him for a while. I had to stop because of time constraints, and I'm really busy right now, but it was kind of a luxury. But I really, really into that, you know. I just got Deathloop. I just ordered that just came in the mail.
Great. Fantastic. You're going to love it. Yeah.
Okay, great. I've been hearing, and I'm really excited to.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
But yeah, I that, and then on stream, where I want to go through all like the military games that I missed out on because my community is really into it. So I'm playing Battlefield 1, try to get through the Battlefield series, try to get the Call of Duty series, all that kind of stuff. I'm playing through the Mass Effect series right now. I never got a chance to play that. And so I'm kind of going back. The theme of my stream has been going back and playing all those games that I never had a chance or just didn't know about to play, you know. And then Friday mornings we started playing Subnautica, which is amazing. So
yeah, I did manage to jump in on that earlier this morning at the time of recording. It was a first playthrough for you. How did you find that sort of survival aspect of games? Are you someone who enjoys that aspect, or is it a little bit new for you?
Yeah, I love the survival genre. I love resource management and all that kind of stuff. Now, I have to be careful because when it comes to games that are big and massive like that, that, you know, like anything that's resource management and stuff like that, I have to be very careful because I will just like lose my whole life in those games. Like I don't play Destiny 2, I don't play World of Warcraft, I don't play all these big massive games because it's like I just have other things to do. I got to pay my bills, you know, and stuff. I got to work on this, that, and the other thing, you know, because it's like that little, the resource management for me is like, it's like a little dopamine hit every time I gather something and create something and mold something and improve something and build another part of my base or whatever. So I really like it. I don't love the ocean. I'm scared of the ocean, but I love this ocean on this alien planet. And you know, I love that it's just all new stuff. Kind of like, I was reminded of like the, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Like, yes. Everywhere you turn, around every corner, underneath every rock is something new to discover. And I love that. And so it seems, this game just seems so massive to me. And somebody gifted it to me, actually. I've been gifted a couple of different games since I started streaming. I'm so humbled and honored that anyone would want to give me anything, you know, gift me a game. But like, you have to play it. I'm like, I'll get to it. Like, I'll give it to you. Play this game, you know. So it's been a lot of fun.
It's an interesting one because a lot of the people that I've seen who have played Subnautica for the first time are normally pretty terrified of what lurks beneath in that game. And as someone who, I guess, probably isn't great with sort of going down that far and sort of the depths and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, I'm gonna sort of I'll steer clear. I think it's probably the best way to describe it. But
you have a lot more to worry about being on that island than I would maybe in the Pacific coast. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's a continent. Sorry.
we get both. It makes sense. You had the right idea, but we've got a lot to worry about. Yes, that's for sure. But yeah, so you've talked about sort of going back and revisiting sort of those popular games, I guess, over the last sort of maybe decade or so. Is there something specific that you wouldn't play, or is there anything specifically that I guess be of interest to you? Like I'd seen the list of games that you'd played on your stream, and it's quite an extensive list of the who's who, I guess, of games in the last sort of 10 years. Is there something that probably doesn't stand out to you as much?
Well, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to be, it would be hard to think about going back, but like Fortnite, I'm never going to play Fortnite. Just okay. Doesn't interest me. It's not, you know, I feel like the people that play it, well, in terms of, I'd probably just never play it. something like that. I'm trying to think of game franchises that I don't think I feel like I would go back and visit. You know, I mean, out of respect for my community, I would really like to try to go through the Halo series. And it's not that I dislike it. It's just that that passed me by. You know what I mean? And that's just one that, like, well, you know, it's kind of like I don't seek out older movies, like classic films and stuff like that. But I always enjoy them whenever I do watch them. If you can get me to sit down and watch, you know, Vertigo or whatever, I'm sure I'd enjoy it. It's just like, it's just not on my radar. So Halo is one of those one of those series where it's like people, what I'm discovering is, you know, like with my days with, you know, the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and the first PlayStation, I'm meeting younger guys, younger people that grew up. These games have really had an influence on them. You know, like much of what you talk about on your podcast, I'm sure, you know, these games created these memories for them, and they can attach them to certain parts and certain times of their lives and stuff. That's like Halo for, I think, for a lot of people. And so I would like to help them to relive that and then kind of create my own memories playing the game. It's just I got a long list, you know, and I don't know that I'll ever be able to get to it, you know.
Well, Israel, you did mention that we are here specifically to talk about a game that you feel has influenced your personal life or your career, and we should probably move on to that. What particular game have you chosen for us today?
I'd love to talk about the 1996 game Vandal Hearts from the PS1 by Konami.
So I should point out before we start, we've had a plethora of different games on this podcast, well-known games and games that I've never heard of. This is one that I have legitimately no idea about. And this is the one where I've normally before, I'll peel back the curtain a little bit. Normally before our podcast, ladies and gentlemen, I do like to ask the guest what game they are playing. And he, Israel, said to me, I want to talk about Vandal Hearts. And my brain just went blank. I'd never heard of this game before. But yes, the 1996 game Vandal Hearts, Konami, another Konami title. They've been pretty big in at least my sort of gaming upbringing. They did the Metal Gear Solid series for a long time. What was your sort of first experiences with Vandal Hearts, and how did you come across it?
I attach one of the reasons I love, you know, having been a gamer for so long, is you can attach games to certain times in your life, you know. And so this was when I was in high school in Colorado, there were other games that I almost said, because they all have a common thread or a common reason why I like them, is I love a good story. I want a good story, you know. I'm never going to play Fortnite, you know, because I just, unless there's a story there that I'm just not seeing. But it's just like the emphasis is more on the action and the gameplay and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when I was younger, I didn't have a lot of money. Even all the way through high school, I never had a lot of money, you know. So when I had money to buy a game, I wanted it to really touch me and affect me. And I wanted it to last a long time, which is why I tried to play a lot of role-playing games, a lot of RPGs when I was younger.
Because okay,
the
yeah.
game had to last, you know.
Yeah.
Not that I beat a lot of other kinds of games. You know, I probably could have played other games. I just gave up on them, you know. But I love RPGs because you get to experience, you get to live with the character. You get to watch them grow and develop. You get to watch them engage in different relationships and stuff like that. And then you look back after the game ends and you realize you've gone on this whole journey. And it's really affecting, you know. I love that. I love a good story in any format. So this is one of those ones that has a really great story, you know. It's a dark story. There's a lot of kind of political unrest, and the Republic of Istaria, but there's a lot of corruption, and so there's this rebellion, and there's this figure that rises to the top and unites these people against the government. There's a big war, and they bring it down. Then they kind of reconstitute a new government. Actually, there's a monarchical, tyrannical kind of dynasty, and then they replace it with like a republic government. This is all before the game takes. This is all before the game starts. So the game starts with this republic. You know, there's a lot of corruption still, and one of the main characters, Ash Lambert. There you go. And his buddy is a part of the Istarian security force, and they kind of uncover these kind of plans of corruption and stuff, and these kind of wheeling and dealing guys. And there's corrupt politicians, and there's other corrupt soldiers and stuff like that. But they kind of, every character kind of has their reasons. There's a couple of like mustache twirling evil guys, but everyone, you know, every character in the story kind of has a reason for why they're doing what they're doing. And it's turn-based strategy, you know, so it's like it's tactics style, it's XCOM 2, it's, Final Fantasy Tactics and things like that. So that was fun, and that's what I like about turn-based strategies, is because it'll take me 10 minutes to make a move. because it's really hard for me to focus on more than one thing at a time. I forget stuff. I'm like, where's my guy? Okay, and how far can he shoot his arrow? Okay, what if I did this? And I try out all the scenarios, and then I make a move, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why I like that game so much, because I can take my time. But, you know, the characters develop relationships, and there's little vignettes with the characters where you get to know them a little bit better. And so by the end of the, you know, by the end of the game, you know, there's tragedy at the end. There's sacrifice. Self-sacrifice has always really touched me deeply. Any story that has to do with self-sacrifice or giving up your life for somebody else, it brings me to tears. It's really touching. And I remember the ending of that game to this day, you know. And the ending's really kind of dark, you know, spoilers, you know, it's been out for a while, but, you know, it's struggle, it's sacrifice, it's not this kind of happy ending, people still struggle after the end of the game, you know, and they drift apart, and it's really kind of melancholy, but man, oh man, did it affect me, obviously, after so many years, I still remember it, I'm a check the block kind of guy when it comes to most video games. If I play through a game, I'm done. I had that experience, I'm fine. But if I play through a game again, I know that it kind of has a special place in my heart. You know, Fear 2 is another one that's like such a random, rare, you know, that I've played through that like 3 or 4 times. I don't know why. I just like the story, and I like the gameplay and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, that's just Vandal Hearts really just. I'd like to go back and play it sometime, because I don't know how it would hold up if I would remember it the same way. Just really great, you know.
It's an interesting sort of look at it, because I feel like, having looked at video of gameplay and sort of really investigating the game, there's a lot of similar sort of styles and ideas for Vandal Hearts that seem to resonate alongside a lot of other its RPG counterparts. You know, it has that isometric view, the text boxes, menus, and all that sort of stuff. So it certainly uses that sort of style. But even looking through it, like, there's classes in this game as well. So there's like swords, archers, monks, clerics. Like, there's all these sorts of different styles, and I guess that sort of separated it from the contemporaries of its time. Like, you were able to, I guess, differentiate yourself with different classes and create a sort of team or a style that I guess set you apart from everything else. Like, it must have been interesting for you being able to sort of pick your team, and I'm assuming you've had multiple runs where you pick different classes. Yep. and sort of styles. Like, have you always been sort of interested in that sort of tactical style? Like, you mentioned that you take quite some time to make a decision. Has that sort of tactical style been something that's always interested you?
Well, not particularly, not as a genre. It's not like I'm a tactics kind of guy, but with Vandal Hearts, I was so invested in the story that I forced myself to play through the tactics and to try to win, because I wanted to know what the next part of the story was, you know? And so I really, you know, there's actually a cheat, like, I think 30% through the game, where it's a part where you can level up your guys endlessly until they're all beefed up, and then you just roll through the rest of the game. So that's been a fun way to kind of play it. But no, it does increase the replay value, because you can change their kind of two branching, you know, jobs at the beginning for each character, and then those ones have branches you invest them in that kind of lane, and then they get really beefed up by the end, and their costume change, you know, and stuff. It is kind of a cool experience in that, you know, in that regard. The only other one that I ever played, that I really played in terms of strategy, was, well, there was a couple. There was Final Fantasy Tactics, and I mostly played that because it's like the Final Fantasy genre, and then there's a lot of that one's a little more disconnected, in that there are the main characters with their stories and stuff like that, but you can also hire generic characters and rename them and customize them. You can have chocobos and things like that, and so that's fun. The story was not as engaging for me personally, but the other series was the XCOM series, and I played XCOM from way back, like PC, and then PlayStation, with the famously annoyingly 5-minute long load times between the world and then the battle screen. And then, man, the new XCOM series 1 and then 2, 2 we actually played on stream. Boy, really just fun, you know. I like the sci-fi aspect of that, and then also how you can develop the characters and stuff. That's very rewarding, you know. It's a hard curve on XCOM 2. It's very frustrating, but once you get past that, it's pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I agree in the sense that you did mention playing a game or enjoying a story so much in a game that you play through, I guess, sort of difficult mechanics or parts of a game that you didn't really enjoy just because the story was so engrossing. That sort of resonates with me because a lot of my favorite games, like L.A. Noire and The Last of Us, have been such a gripping sort of story, but sometimes the mechanics can be lacking, I'd say, is probably the easiest way to describe it. But I think having such an engrossing story, they've been able to push me towards the end just because I want to see what happens next. So I definitely do agree with that part. But yeah, we definitely won't be getting you playing any sort of Civ games or anything like that on stream anytime soon.
No time soon, man. By the way, honorable mention, if you want to talk about like engrossing stories and stuff, people ask me what my favorite game is, and it's always like, what's your favorite game? I don't know. But have you ever played Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice? Have you played that at all?
Yeah, that is a particularly confronting title. But
what a hard ride that is to go through, and they do it so well, and I just can't wait for the sequel. That one's just been on my mind lately because I saw the trailer for the sequel coming out sometime next year, I think. But so sad and wonderful.
Hits you in the chest. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should probably wrap up soon, but I guess to round things off and bring things, I guess, full circle, Israel, what in particular for you in terms of Vandal Hearts, what would you say was the biggest influence for you, I guess, in your personal life or your career? What was the reason that you decided to discuss this game today? I know that you mentioned having that story and those moral choices. How has that resonated with you all these years later?
Up until last year, I probably could have picked a couple of different games if you were to ask me like what to talk about. But I was thinking about why this game kind of kept popping to mind. I guess there's two reasons. The first one is Eleni and Ash. Eleni is a female character, Ash is a male character. Their relationship throughout the course of the game develops and stuff like that, and it's not like it never turns romantic, but it's almost like a older brother younger sister relationship, and I have to say what happens at the end, but at the end of the game, Ash, there's a magical item and it's about to go supernova, and Ash uses a special sword he's got called the Vandal Heart to neutralize the energy, and yet it pulls him into kind of a warp and he disappears, you know. It really affected me, like, you know, the end credits are her kind of narrating where everybody's lives have gone after the ending events of the game, and she's sitting there, she's writing about the days going by, nothing really changing, and then there's a familiar tune. He had Ash had an ocarina that he would play this certain tune, and she hears it outside, and she opens the door, and you don't get to see, but she runs out, and she's like, "It's you. It's been so long." She's like grown up now, you know. She's like in her middle years and stuff. And so, man, oh man, obviously it still has an effect on me today. It's just such a powerful moment that you can't get at the end of a game if you haven't taken that journey and they hadn't created those characters and those relationships, you know. So chasing that feeling, you know, going for a video game that would affect you as much as that did all these years later is a popular pursuit of mine when I'm looking for a game to play. But the other reason is, you know, the ending is not a happy ending. Some of the ending titles are like, things went on much as they did before. The conflict didn't really change a whole lot, you know?
Yeah.
And man, oh man, times are tough these days, you know? And I turned 41 last year, or this year, I turned 41 about a week ago. And it's just, I don't mind getting older. It's fine. Whatever. I don't mind. I'm not like, oh, I don't want to get older, you know. But I have lived 41 years on this planet, and man, sometimes it's hard. You see things don't seem to be getting better sometimes, you know, out there in the real world. And, you know, the game talks about, you know, but it's like, it doesn't matter. It's only when people choose to give up that will to live, that will to fight, that's when evil really does triumph, you know. And there's that popular saying, the only true evil is when good men do nothing. And, you know, I've just, that's bigger in my heart and my mind nowadays. It's like, what am I doing? You know, and I'm so thankful to be doing what I'm doing right now in terms of pursuing the career of content creation. But I want to really try to make things better for people. You know, I want to try to lift people up. You know, I'm a Christian. I want to share my faith. You know, I want to make a positive difference on this earth, because I'm not going to be here forever, you know. And if I can try to move the needle a little bit towards the good, I want to do that, because if my military experience has taught me anything, there's a lot of evil out there. You know, it's not just relative. You know, I believe in, probably because of my faith, I believe in objective good and evil. You know, there's a lot of evil out there, but we shouldn't lose hope. You know what I mean? Because you really do have to get out there. And you know, there was a time in my life when I just wanted to kind of do my thing. Just leave me alone, man. Just leave me alone. I just want to do my thing. Just live and let live. And I don't believe that anymore. You know, I'm not going to get any people's faces. I'm not going to get radical or anything like that. But I am going to push back, you know, and I do want to speak up. And so I don't know that anybody living in a free society gets to make that choice. You can make that choice. Everybody has a choice to do what they want. But if you don't, somebody's going to make that choice for you, and it may not be something that you like, you know. So that's why I like Vandal Hearts the video game. That's why I chose to talk about it.
Well, that was some excellent words and well said. That was a really sort of excellent way to finish off, Israel, and a big thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Matt, thank you.
Is there an account or a Twitter that people can follow you on? Where can people find you?
Oh, they can come to my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/myhappyself, the Pop Culture Field Manual podcast. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, we've also got a YouTube channel, Pop Culture Field Manual, where you get the visual versions of each episode. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. It's myhappyself2, myhappyself and the number 2. And that's where I usually post kind of nostalgic pictures from when I was in and that kind of things. And I try to tweet more than I do now. But but I'm just getting out there, I have a Discord. If you come to my stream sometime, I broadcast Mondays and Wednesday evenings, California Pacific time, and then Friday mornings. But you can get on our Discord that way. And it's a good community. I'm very thankful for the community that has kind of sprung up around my social media presence. Good people, you know. And so I'm thankful for that. And so we're trying to do some good that way.
Yeah, excellent. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to follow what we're doing at One Perfect Game, you can always do so following OPG Pod. You can always follow me on Twitter at @itstilby. But that is it for today. From myself, Matthew Tilby, and my very special guest, Israel Wright, it is goodbye for now. Take care.